Jake from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, a show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trump.
John, how you doing? It's December! We made it to December!
I will take your word for it because time has no meaning anymore.
You don't even know what month it is, what day it is, what year it is.
No, I mean, I find out what month it is when I start being hassled for bills.
Got it. But, I mean, you got to know it's December, right? You're hearing, you know, wonderful Christmas time on the radio. You're seeing people buying gifts and what have you. Buying
eggnog. I assume I go out.
You know what? As soon as I said it, I was like, no.
I go out and I do things.
I assumed you interacted with other people. You know what? No. That's on me.
No. Rookie mistake.
I apologize. Yeah. But guys, it's December. We're less than 30 days away from being finished with this garbage, you know, poop filled dumpster fire of a year. Mm-hmm. We made it, guys. Standing strong. And thank the good Lord we did it.
And, 45 days until we have a change in the White House. So, yay.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully a change for the better. I mean, it's definitely going to be a change for the better.
Could it not be? Joe Biden could spend 4 years literally, like, flinging poop at people, and it would still be an improvement.
Yeah, it would be. I would be like, wow, that's really presidential. Like, his aim and accuracy.
He's restored dignity to the office.
Yeah, I haven't seen poop slinging like that since Taft.
Taft was a good poop slinger.
Right? Oh, he slinged the best of them.
The big news for us this week, Saturday Night Live came back.
Hey, we did it. Came back. New episode came out yesterday, December 5th. Jason Bateman and musical guest Morgan Wallen.
Morgan Wallen, who I still say is pronouncing his name wrong, but, you know, I'm resigned to it.
How do you think you should pronounce it? It's Wall and an E-N, Wallen.
Yeah, I thought originally it was a Wall, like W-H-A-L-E-N. So I was thinking it should be Whalen, but yeah, it is actually spelled W-A-L-E-N. So I guess the pronunciation makes marginally more sense.
Yeah, I understand. Like, you know, well, words are hard. So I could see how you could be thrown off by that.
Yeah.
So that's the episode we're going to talk about today. But before that, I should talk about a little show I watched this last week that I really got into and dug and is connected to SNL. And that's a little show called Ted Lasso on Apple TV.
I have heard of Ted Lasso. I hear it's really good. I have not watched it yet. So tell us about Ted Lasso, Darren Patterson.
I will, John Trumbull. I will. So for those that don't know, Ted Lasso is this character that Jason Sudeikis created for promos for NBC Sports. He's basically like this, like a football coach, and like they would have him doing in the press release and the press conferences, talking to reporters and whatnot. And it was like a funny little ongoing promo that they did. It was a good character. And I guess they just had the idea to take that character, make a TV show around him. So Sudeikis got together with Bill Lawrence, who you definitely know his sitcoms. He was the co-creator of Spin City, Scrubs, and Cougar Town, and they made this show, Ted Lasso. And I, like, when I first heard about it, I was kind of whatever about it. Like, I was interested in it, but then I heard it was going to be on Apple TV. Then I was like, oh, I gotta like download another streaming service and just to watch this and, you know, pay whatever just to watch this. Like, I'm done. Cause like right now I have Netflix, I have Amazon, Disney Plus, and Hulu. And now I feel like that's enough. Like, I don't like just going to the lengths of downloading yet another streaming service. I didn't know if it was worth it, but I'd seen a lot of people on my Facebook timeline and on Twitter saying, yo, Ted Lasso is really good. Check it out. It's really good. It's really good. And I don't know, just this past week, I was like, yeah, you know what? Let me give this Ted Lasso a shot and see what all the hubbub is about. And sure enough, I really dug it. It really wasn't what I was expecting it to be. Yeah, it's really good. All right, so the basic premise of it is Ted Lasso, played by Jason Sudeikis, he's kind of like a small-time college football coach. And he's had some success with his team. Like, they've gone to win the, I don't know what college football teams, like what the big game is. Like, they won the big championship sweepstakes, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, it's a sweepstakes. Yeah,
sweepstakes. They won the big sweepstakes. Yes, they won the big sweepstakes.
Ed McMahon for their front door with a giant check. Yes.
Yes, Ed McMahon, giant check, balloons, confetti, you know, sweepstakes.
Yeah, like in sports.
Yes, exactly. It was that except for Sports Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So so he has like some success, even though he's kind of like low level, but he's mostly well known for like a viral video that went wild because like after they won, he did like the celebratory dance with his team, and like you can see his dance moves were straight out of What's Up With That when he was the running man, mm-hmm. He has those same moves, so he's more known for that viral video than it's for like his coaching skills. So what happens is he gets offered a job as a manager for an English Premier Soccer League, AFC Richmond, over in London, England. And he gets this job even though he's never coached soccer, does not know how soccer is played, doesn't know the rules of soccer, and has never been to England.
Cool. He sounds like the perfect guy for the job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a reason why he gets the job. They explain it in the first episode. I'll let you if you're going to watch, I'll
let the people discover it.
Yeah, I'll let you guys discover it. But they explain in the first episode why he got the gig. But so he figures, oh, this is a challenge for me. I'll go for it. And he brings his coach, Coach Beard, who's like a guy he's known for years, and they have like a great camaraderie. They're pretty much like best friends, and you know, is basically his second in command, the Spock to his Captain Kirk. So just the two Americans go over to England for the first time, and they take over this small, struggling soccer team that's like kind of like they had. Like, basically, it's a soccer team where its glory days are kind of behind them. And, like, so they bring in Ted Lasso to sort of bring them up to the prominence that they once had. And, of course, Ted Lasso, Jason Sudeikis does a really good job with this character because, like, when you first see him and look at him, you think he's, like, you know, just, oh, dumb, dopey American. Because Ted Lasso, his character is, like, very positive. He's always smiling. He's very chatty and, like, you know, he's kind of a man of honor. And he has that Southern accent, so automatically people think he's, you know, kind of a rube, like a dopey yokel, like, you know. And I kind of thought that, too. I thought, like, with the show, it was going to be like, oh, it's a, you know, a fish out of water, American in the UK, you know, dumb, silly, dopey American, like a dumb American type. But with this character, Ted Lasso, he's not that at all. He's actually a lot smarter than people give him credit for. Like his character is sort of a mix between, I would say, like a Jimmy Stewart and like a Will Rogers type of thing. And there were some times where I'd watch an episode and he reminded me very much of Parks and Recreation, of Leslie Knope. So it's like he has more of that vibe to him. And it's I just was like, oh, this guy is like smarter than I gave him credit for. Like, you know, he's aware of how he comes off sometimes, but he still smiles. He's still really positive. A lot of the, when he has his first press conference, a lot of the reporters write him off. A lot of the fans of the team write him off as like, oh, you kidding me? We're getting this American bloke. He don't know about football. And, you know, like that. And you'd have all the soccer players write him off, but he just smiles and he just gives it his all. And he honestly charms you and he wins you over. By the end of the episode, he's like that type of dude. And I really dug it. It's like it's smartly written. And it's also it's like a strong feel good show too. It gets you feeling warm and like, you know, positive, which of course in this world, we need all of that we can get. Like the same way somebody would watch like an episode of maybe Schitt's Creek or Parks and Recreation or The Good Place or like one of those feel-good sitcoms. Ted Lasso is a lot like that. And I really dug it. Like, I really hope it's more people watch it. That's the only thing that I'm kind of worried about Is that because it's on Apple TV, not enough people watch it? Like, not enough people have Apple TV? And this, I think this is like a show that deserves a bigger audience. Like, I did
hear on the Scrubs podcast this week that they are doing three seasons of it.
Yes, yeah, it did get renewed for a season two and three, but I don't know. Like, I kind of get vibes of like a Party Down or even maybe AP Bio, which is on Peacock, and Party Down, mm-hmm. of course, was on Stars, where those are both really good shows that deserve a bigger audience, but because they're on these networks that not a lot of people have, not a lot of people know how to get, and it might not be getting the eyes and the audience that it deserves. That's what I think.
Okay. So, Darren Patterson approved.
Yes, I think it's a great show. One thing I also noticed too that, you know, caught my eye and made me chuckle is that whenever there's a scene of somebody using a phone or on a computer, you can best believe it's going to be an Apple phone or an Apple computer, and you can best believe you will see that Apple logo. Like, if you did a shot for every time you saw the Apple logo on something, some device somebody was using, you'd be, like, plowed by episode three.
That doesn't surprise me too much.
Yeah. But, yeah, so you'll see the Apple logo a lot, but, like, aside from that, it is, like, a really good show. Like, Sudeikis it's one of those shows where the whole thing is kind of centered around Sudeikis and just him carrying it and him being like really charming and being really heartfelt. Like, even though he's a guy who's like always smiling and laughing and like really wants to, you know, the best for his team and people and treats everybody equally, you can see he's kind of going through his things too, because there is one scene where he's calling his wife and son back home in America, and you know, he's on the phone with his son, he really loves his son. And then he gets on the phone with his wife, and like they're kind of going through a rough patch. Like, she needs kind of, you know, some space and time to figure out what she wants from their marriage, but he still loves her, but he needs to give her that space. So there are a lot of like very heartfelt moments in it too. And I don't know, it's just a really good mix of just heartfelt warmth, just like positive attitude, and genuinely funny stuff. Like, guys, watch Ted Lasso. I can't recommend it enough.
Okay, so that was our Ted Lasso podcast for the week. So
yes.
Please join us next week where we'll talk more about Ted Lasso.
Yes, thank you for coming to my TED talk. Huh? So Jason Bateman, Morgan Whalen, let's do it.
Jason Bateman, Morgan Whalen on SNL. This was season 46, episode 7, aired December 5th, 2020. So yeah, this was interesting. It's Jason Bateman coming back to host for the first time in 15 years. He last hosted in 2015, back during the Arrested Development days. And we have Morgan Whalen coming in after the whole kerfluffle a couple of months ago when he was supposed to be on the Bill Burr episode.
Yes, both of those things that they mentioned in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Both are addressed. So shall we get into it?
We shall get into it.
Okay, so first off, we have the Michigan hearings cold open, which is just kind of covering some of the insanity that we've had in the weeks since the election, where, President Orange Baby Man is refusing to concede, and he's filing all sorts of lawsuits, and Rudy Giuliani is just getting progressively more insane by the day.
Absolutely, and I think you tweeted out about this a couple days ago, where we knew we were going to see the Melissa Carone character. And yeah. I think we were trying to figure out who would play Melissa Carone.
Yeah.
Cause like, I thought it would be like, oh, it's probably either going to be like Heidi or Kate. And as soon as I tweeted that, I was like, oh wait, no, it can't be Kate. Cause Kate needs to play Rudy.
Yeah.
I thought it might be Chloe, but then it wasn't. But then you tweeted out something saying, well, yeah, you go ahead. You said you tweeted it.
Well, I don't have the tweet in front of me. I can't remember what the exact thing I tweeted. I just was like, you know, this is an ideal character for Cicely Strong. I really hope she comes back to the show this week. And lo and behold, she did. I mean, because Melissa Carone, if you have watched the footage of her, she is basically Cicely's character, the girl you wish you hadn't started a conversation with at a party. I mean, there is hardly any difference between the two.
Yeah, it was pretty spot. She was just like doing that character, but just a little bit more drunken slurring throughout.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, both of those, just, you know, the malaprops and the drunken slurring, those are all just right in Cecily Strong's wheelhouse. So I was very pleasantly surprised to see that she played the character, because I thought it was kind of a no-brainer. And she did a great job, because, again, yeah, that was your wheelhouse.
Yeah, there was even one point where the Melissa Caron character, they said, oh, I signed an after David.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is straight up something that the girl you wish you wouldn't have gotten a blah, 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 blah would say.
Yes.
Like, but yeah, I mean, as far as cold opens goes, I wasn't too wild about this one. I don't know. You give your thoughts first, and I'll
also up. Not too wild about it. I mean, it just seemed like they were trying to cover a lot of the insanity the last few weeks. We had Heidi popping up as a woman who's testifying that she ate ballots. We had Beck Bennett playing Mike Liddell, the MyPillow guy, who's, you know, a big Trump supporter, and we had the ever-increasing insanity of Kate McKinnon as Rudy Giuliani, who just becomes more of this weird troll man every time he pops up.
Yeah, it was, I mean, this, I don't know, I thought this cold open was a bit of a miss. Not a bit of a miss, I thought it was a pretty huge, I mean, for one thing, like, the audience didn't seem to be into it. Like, the audience was kind of quiet throughout a lot of it.
Not a lot of response from the audience, no. And I feel like it was also going off in a whole lot of different directions. Towards the end, we've got Chloe as Nicole Kidman's character from The Undoing. So now suddenly we're talking about Nicole Kidman's accent in this project that I honestly have not even heard of. And then they
have, like,
Pete and Kyle, I mean, I knew pop up as the militia guys who were trying to kidnap the governor. And yeah, it was just going off in a lot of different directions.
Yeah, like, I mean, SNL has done this before where they just, like, put in, like, a lot of ideas into one sketch. And it kind of reminds me of, like, when you're channel surfing, looking for something you like. It seems like they're just putting in a bunch of different things, hoping people just like it. Like, oh, you don't like this Rudy Giuliani? Well, here's Cecily Strong doing Melissa Caron. Oh, you don't like that? Here's the MyPillow guy. You don't like that? Here's Heidi. If you don't like that, oh, here's Alex Moffat talking about aliens for some reason. Oh, you don't like that? Here's Chloe doing her Nicole Kidman impression from a TV show you may or may not have seen. Like, it just seemed like they were just going from one thing to another thing to another thing, just hoping something will hit.
You know, and I just kind of wanted to go, like, guys, you don't have to talk about every single thing that's happened since you've been off the air. You can let a couple things go, you know? It's like, we're going to get this thing into this sketch, even though it has no connection with what the sketch is ostensibly about. So it's a weird kind of meandering sketch.
Yeah, and then they had Lauren Holt in there, the new cast member. She had no lines at all.
She did.
That was weird.
Live from New York at Saturday night, though, and I'm sure that had to be a thrill for her. I mean, she got to say Kate and Cecily, but still, it's got to be a real thrill when you're a new cast member and you get to say that for the very first time.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that's fun. But, like, I don't know. The whole sketch was just there to react off of Rudy Giuliani's farting, and it was weird. Like, I thought, like, because, like, that was a big thing too about, like, oh, did Rudy Giuliani fart through this court, you know, this court thing? Mm-hmm. And I thought they would do something with that, but all they did was have the fart noise and then Rudy Giuliani say, oh no, that wasn't me, that was her.
Right.
And that was a joke. That was it. I was like, really? That's all you got? I was like, ew.
Yeah. So, you know, not the greatest cold open they've ever done. But next we have our host. We have Jason Bateman, who comes out and he does his monologue. And I really like Jason Bateman. I've been a fan of his. I guess I really became a big time fan of his on Arrested Development. Although I have fond memories of watching him as a kid on Silver Spoons and It's Your Move. Do you remember those shows?
Silver Spoons, I do. It's Your Move, I kind of do. Kind of, but not really.
Yeah, it only ran for, you know, maybe a year or two. It was like, because he was like the breakout character on Silver Spoons, because he was Ricky Schroeder's best friend. And then he got this, it wasn't a spinoff. He was playing a different character on It's Your Move, but he was like this young con man. And he was being raised by a single mother, and then the guy, I can't remember the guy's name. The guy who was the first husband on Married with Children for the neighbors.
Steve Rose.
Yeah.
David Stratharian? No.
No, it wasn't David. That's not that actor. I can't remember the actor's name, and I'm not going to bother looking it up. But he was a guy, and he was like, started dating Jason Bateman's mom, but he was like kind of on to all the kids' usual tricks.
I'm on to you, kid. Yeah. I think I kind of remember. It kind of sounds like a mix between Saved by the Bell and the cartoon Top Cat, where it's like some kid always running a hustle and he has like his friends in on it and stuff like that.
I never watched Top Cat, and this was before Saved by the Bell, but I'll agree. That's a perfect analogy.
Thank you. You never saw Top Cat? It's an old cartoon, the Hanna-Barbera.
Top Cat. I've just never really watched Top Cat.
Fair enough.
But actually, I just looked up It's Your Move on Wikipedia, and apparently Garrett Morris was also on the show, which I had no idea of.
What?
Yeah.
That's bonkers.
Yeah. Wow. So
Garrett Morris, he's a man of mystery. Like, he just pops up in things. I had no idea.
Yeah, I had no idea either. So, you know, what do you know? Okay. Unexpected SNL connection. But I've liked Jason Bateman for quite some time. I think he's really funny. I think he knows he's a really good straight man. He knows he's good at the deadpan stuff. He knows his way around a line. I really like him. I enjoy seeing him pop up and stuff.
Yeah, no, he's one of those guys that just can do comedy and drama really well. I mean, like, I think most people know him from, you know, Arrested Development and whatnot, but like now he's doing Ozark, and which is a totally different thing, and he's carrying that off pretty well too. He's just like he's just one of those guys that just kind of ridden the line between silly comedies and like serious dramas. And he's
done it really well. Seen Ozark. Is Ozark good?
It's all right. Like, I tried to get into it and it was like, I don't know if I'm digging it, but my wife likes it.
So okay.
There's that.
All right. So I thought his monologue was really solid. I mean, he comes out and he's got a nice self-deprecating thing. He was like, you know, I last hosted 15 years ago, so you know I made a hell of an impression. And he talked about how they had a sketch where they used a chimpanzee, and they brought the chimpanzee out for good nights, and he says, and the chimpanzee tried to kill me.
Yeah, and this is all true. The chimpanzee was used in a sketch called, and I quote, "Throwing Poop at Celebrities."
Right.
And it's exactly about that. Like, whatever you think in your mind a sketch called Throwing Poop at Celebrities is about, that's what it is.
I did not look the sketch up. Did you? Is this sketch anywhere online?
Yes, it's on YouTube.
Okay, I got to find it after we finish recording. I didn't think to look for it. But
yeah, you see like you see Daryl Hammond dresses Sean Connery, rest in peace. You see Keenan Thompson still on the show back then, dressed as Bill Cosby, and there's like Amy Poehler dressed as like Sharon Stone and stuff, and it's just celebrities getting thrown poop at.
Exactly what it says on the tin. Okay.
Yep. Right. as advertised.
But he talks about they brought the monkey out for good nights, and then Jason Bateman like kind of leans into the chimpanzee, and he says the chimpanzee like took that as a threat and like kind of took a swipe at him or tried to bite him. And they show the clip of them at good nights, and you see the chimpanzee kind of lunge at Jason Bateman a little bit, and it really disturbs Rachel Dratch behind him.
Yeah, Rachel Dratch got freaked out. She was like, oh my God, am I about to see a murderer right now?
Yeah. She actually commented on it on Twitter, I saw. She was like, yeah, I learned that you'd never fuck with a monkey.
Yeah, they look cute and cuddly, but not so much.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was, that was interesting. I mean, I thought this was cool because you know, this is a story that Jason Bateman has probably been telling for the last 15 years, and they just tweaked it a bit, and that was their monologue.
Yeah. And then Jason goes on to say, you know, after that little incident, he heard that the monkey felt sorry and wanted to apologize. So I went backstage and had a very, you know, the monkey kind of hugged me and told me, like, you know, he didn't tell me, but he showed he was very sorry and remorseful for what he did, and that there was a very sweet moment. And then he just waits a beat and he says, so later on I had the monkey destroyed later that night,
Right. It was my choice. Lessons have to be learned. And he just does it perfectly deadpan. I mean, that's why Jason Bateman is so damn funny, is he could just say the most absurd stuff with the straightest face. And it's hilarious. He's great.
Lessons had to be learned.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, like the monologue I dug. Just that line he said, like, I was like, all right, I'm on board.
Okay. Yeah, and then at the very end of the monologue, he just very quickly says, like, the monkey's still alive, just so they don't get letters. You know, because you know there's some humor handicapped person out there who's just like, how dare you destroy a monkey, sir, and blah, 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 blah. And...
yeah. They joked about killing monkeys. No, I don't think so.
That's not right, you guys. You shouldn't kill a monkey for a monologue.
Right. Monkeys aren't here for your humor, for your jokes.
That's right. They have rich inner lives. So I thought this was a good monologue. I thought this got the show back on track.
Right, exactly. I dug the monologue. I loved
it. So next, first sketch is Sleepover 2. This was kind of a callback to a sketch that they did before with Adam Driver back in January, with a bunch of teenage girls having a sleepover. And Jason Bateman comes in as the dad, and he awkwardly explains that one of the girls left a period stain on one of the couch cushions, and then they panicked and put the entire cushion in their washing machine. The washing machine flooded. There were suds everywhere. Then they tried to put it in the dryer, and then, like, the feathers exploded out, I think. And then Kate McKinnon as Megan comes in covered in suds and feathers. And she's trying to play it like, oh my gosh, who did this horrible thing?
Right. It basically hits the same beats as the sketch from when Adam Driver hosted. And
I rewatched the Adam Driver sketch. It is like basically beat for beat the same sketch. They vary up a few things. I mean, this time she's covered in suds and feathers, which I think that was good. I think if they're going to revisit this again, have her covered in even more things.
Yes, that's what comedy is. Just covered in things. I mean, I thought this worked better than the Adam Driver sketch just because I think Bateman was a little bit more apt with the comedy a little bit more. Like his deadpan was a little bit funnier. I think at one point Megan says, oh, it wasn't me because, you know, I wear monster tamps.
Yeah, that's just funny phrasing. And I really liked when Jason Bateman, when she starts going into this explanation about her, you know, her whole situation, he just says, I'd sure love less details. I mean, that was just a great, you know, that's a great way to phrase it. I mean, in a more cliched sketch, you'd have just like, oh, a little too much information or, you know, TMI. Right. But, you know, that was a more clever way to phrase it, and he just delivered it beautifully.
Yeah, like the way he said it, just like, it reminded me of like maybe the way like his character would have said it in Arrested Development, too. Like where she keeps going on about, like, you know, how she wears, you know, leather underwear and stuff like that. And he just says, just a little less detail would just be dynamite.
Yeah, yeah. And at one point he pulls Megan aside to see if she wants to confess privately. And Megan just blurts out, I'd like to make love to both you and your wife. Because, you know, her sexuality is like 50-50 at this point, and this would really help her figure things out. And then ultimately everyone else in the party is just so embarrassed for Megan that they confess that they did it. It's very I Am Spartacus.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, of course she goes on to say other things like, you know, just tell the hot dad which one of you Kill Billed his living room.
Yeah.
Just phrases like that. And again, like the audience isn't giving much in this sketch. Like,
yeah, I rewatched the Adam Driver sketch, and even though I agree with you, this version was funnier, they responded a lot more to the Adam Driver one, which is probably why they decided to revisit it.
Yeah, I mean there's one sketch later on we'll talk about where like the audience is just like eerily quiet, and even I was like, oh, come on guys, this is nothing. We'll get into it.
Nothing? Really?
You know, yeah, like, I mean, I'm usually not one to blame the audience, but like once that sketch came on, I was like, all right, this audience sucks.
Yeah. Okay.
I said it. Come at me.
Darren, not a fan of tonight's audience.
Right. I'm not afraid.
Next, we had a pre-tape, which what was the name of this one?
Stew. This is Stew, the big Stew.
Oh, yes, this was Stew. Yeah, this was Santa and his elves and their opening letters that they get. And then it quickly segues into a parody of Eminem's song Stan with Pete Davidson as this Eminem type or Stan type. And he just becomes increasingly more deranged as Santa's unhinged fan.
Yeah, I mean, this is the role Pete Davidson was born to play, as far as I'm concerned.
Very, very suited for Pete Davidson. And we also have Kate McKinnon popping up as Dido, and then Bowen Yang as Elton John, which was a surprise.
Right, because, like, I mean, that was a nod to when Elton John and Eminem performed at the Grammys, because that's, like, back when there was that huge controversy about, like, Eminem being homophobic and in his lyrics and whatnot, and gay people everywhere was really upset. And then he did the song with Elton John, and, like, that seemed to have cooled things over for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And, but yeah, like, I mean, I thought it was a really interesting idea for a sketch. I like the idea of it, basically where, like you said, we have elves reading Santa, played by Bateman, you know, letters from the kids, and then this one elf reads the letter, and he's very disturbed by it, and Santa's like, oh, read the letter out loud. And then he's like, I don't know if I should, Santa. And then he begins reading it, and then it goes into, you know, Dear Santa, like, basically just a straight-up carbon copy parody of Eminem's Stan.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's talking about how much he wants a PS5, and then, like, I like how that we later find out that Elton John also wants a PS5. That's how popular they are.
They're a big deal, the PS5s. Yeah. I have noticed that. I thought the sketch was pretty good. Like, yeah.
And then a cameo from the real Eminem at the end.
Yeah. At the very end of it, we see. I mean, he's in the sketch, like, but, like, I guess he's at home, and then they have, like, a TV is on him, and then he says, oh, wow, I got a PS5 from Santa. Wow, I didn't even ask for this.
Yeah, because the way Santa gets out of it, he just writes Stu back, and he's like, oh, sorry, you have the wrong address, and just to get him to stop.
I like that little twist, too, where, where it had Santa writing back to him, and he just says, wrong address, bro, sorry, not me. I like that little twist of that.
Mm-hmm. This was all right. I mean, you know, very out of left field, but I kind of enjoyed it because it was so bizarre.
Yeah, it was a good. It seems to be the one that's, like, trending right now. A lot of people talking about it. You know, I'm sure a part of it has to do with nostalgia and, like, remembering how big that song was back in the day. But I don't know. I mean, it was also like it's a solid concept. I don't know. I dug this sketch. I thought it was good.
Yeah. All right, so next we have Outdoor Cabaret, which was Bowen and Cecily as cabaret singers. They're performing outdoors because we're in the age of COVID. And Jason Bateman was their keyboard player, who seems to be the only one who's taking the pandemic stuff seriously because he's in a face mask and all that. And it's the difficulties that they have doing outdoor performing.
Right. I mean, one of the things I liked about this sketch was it takes place at the Duplex, which if you're a native New Yorker or you've been to New York, you know that's an actual place. That's like a really well-known cabaret venue, like in the West Village, like not too far from it's like a really well-known venue. So them giving a shout out to the Duplex, I thought was, like, pretty nice.
Mm-hmm. And I thought it was also interesting that Cecily Strong's character, Billy Moon, was very much a Liza Minnelli type. She's basically just doing a Liza Minnelli impression. So I was like, well, this must have been giving Jason, like, Arrested Development flashbacks, because Liza Minnelli Lucille too on that show.
I didn't even think about that. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
That's right.
And they sing, like, this sort of medley of Come On, Get Happy and Happy Days Are Here Again. And, I wasn't nuts about it as a sketch, though, but they seem to be enjoying themselves.
Yeah. At least they're happy.
Yeah.
I kind of agree. I mean, this sketch was more, heartfelt and charming than it was actually funny. I thought. Like, I mean, at one point they say something like, "Oh, the best way to celebrate the first responders and show them how much we, and show them how much we care, the people who are telling us to stay indoors, best way to celebrate them is to go outside and sing."
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, stuff like that. It's, yeah, I mean, Yeah, I thought the sketch was all right. It's charming. It's actually, it's real. The best part I thought of it was Cecily and Bowen singing. I really got a kick out of that. They both got pipes, as the kids say.
Yeah, I mean, they're both good singers. I thought the performances really elevated this stuff. I thought the sketch itself was kind of weak, but I thought the performances were charming enough that I didn't mind it.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree. And of course, the duplex, them giving a shout out to them. As a native New Yorker, I got a kick out of that.
Okay, but, you're from New York.
Have I mentioned I'm from New York?
All right, fine.
I'm very cosmopolitan.
Yeah. Okay. next, we had the Christmas conversation, which was just several daughters calling their mothers on Zoom, telling them that they can't come home for Christmas because of, the whole COVID-19 thing, and the mothers giving them guilt trips.
Right. So it's basically Lauren Holt FaceTiming her mom, played by Heidi. It's Ego FaceTiming her mom, played by Punky Johnson, which I thought Punky's like probably younger than her, but whatever. And we'll play it off. And Chloe FaceTiming her mom, played by Kate McKinnon. And it's like you said, they're all saying, "I can't come for Christmas," which is something I'm sure a lot of people are saying, this month.
Yep.
And of course, the mother is just laying guilt trips on them. One of the best lines I thought in the sketch was Kate McKinnon saying to her daughter, "If you don't love me, just say so. I didn't raise a coward."
Yeah. I thought this was funny in the awkwardness. I thought it did this thing that SNL has this tendency to do where they decided to get sentimental at the end of it. And I'm just like, no, you're a comedy show. Have a big laugh at the end. I don't want you to get sentimental.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. Like, I mean, I got it. I mean, they've done it before in the past. Like, of course they did it on the Eddie Murphy episode, the Christmas episode. And, I think they probably did it with what else is it? Like the Mother's Day episode. They've done that too, where they just ended on a very sweet note. It's like, oh, happy Christmas, everybody! Like, yeah. I get why you'd feel the need to do that, but I don't know if it's the best way. It's the best thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't agree with it. That, I mean, I think they should only get sentimental. Maybe about a fifth as much as they do on the show. So, whenever they end a sketch, it's kind of like saying like, "Oh, we didn't really kill the monkey." It's just, you're pulling back, and I'd rather see them just push further,
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I can dig it. And, we also get like an appearance from Keenan in the sketch. Mm-hmm. He plays Ego's dad in it. And it's honestly, I think this is the only time we could see Keenan throughout this entire show. He's not in any of the other sketches.
I honestly hadn't noticed, but I thought he did a good job in this sketch. I liked that he was like the kind of the coolest dad, the clueless dad, I should say. He like says to his daughter at one point, like, "Honey, we love you unconditionally." And the mother's like, "Nope, we love you conditionally."
That's a good line. Yeah. And, of course, Jason Bateman plays the dad to Chloe. And, of course, she's like the type of dad's like, "See what you're doing to your mother? You're making her, what if she was on an airplane and like that was the last thing you said to her and she died? Would you be happy then? Would that make you happy?"
Yeah. And Chloe's like, "That would not be a problem if you didn't get on an airplane." I mean, just kind of the recurring theme is that the parents just really don't quite get it. They don't get the seriousness of the situation. And they're like, "Why can't we get together for Christmas?"
And it's like, because, there's the Black Plague out there and people are dropping off. Maybe that's why I can't come over for a ham and mac and cheese.
Yeah.
But I thought it was okay. I understand. I get what you're saying about the sentimental ending was like maybe not needed or it was a little too sappy and sweet. But I thought it was like okay overall.
Yeah, I think half the time when they do a sentimental ending, it just kind of, it, it, it screws up what came before. You know, there was a sketch they did. I think it was a Christmas show when Jimmy Fallon was hosting, and he and Cecily Strong did a parody of that song, "Baby It's Cold Outside." But the twist was, you know, like they get together and they have a one night stand, and he can't wait for her to get out of his apartment the next morning. And it was really funny. And then at the very end, they went with the sentimental ending, and they were like, "Oh no, but we actually like each other and we're in love now." And I'm just like, "Oh well, that just ruins the whole thing, guys."
Yeah,
you it's know, like it when was some really funny up until that part, and it just
yeah, but I know what you mean.
It's I'm dead inside, so
right. Yeah, that's right. You're a hollow husk of a man. We all know this. But yeah, it's kind of like when somebody tells a joke. And then, like, immediately after they tell the joke, they're like, "Oh, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding."
Yeah. And it's like, well, give us credit for having some intelligence. So, yeah. So the ending bugged me, but I liked it up until that.
Hey, fair enough. I hear you. Next up, we got ourselves, what's it called? Alabama or?
Morgan Wallen Party.
Yes, Morgan Wallen Party. This one gets a little meta.
Ain't no party like a Morgan Wallen party, because a Morgan Wallen party's a super spreader.
Oh, I like that. I see what you did there.
Yeah, I just came up with that. So, this was kind of commenting on the whole situation that happened a couple months ago when Morgan Wallen was supposed to be the musical guest on the Bill Burr show. He was announced, and then early in the week, footage comes out of him at a party, I think after one of his shows in Alabama.
Yeah,
and he's just not practicing any social distancing. He's not masked. It was just bad.
it was not good.
Yeah.
So,
he was uninvited to the show, and then they got Jack White as a last minute substitute, and he kicked ass.
He was way better. I'm gonna say it right now. Way better.
Yeah. but this was kind of a funny thing. So this is like flashing back to that night, that party night, and Morgan Wallen's like, "Oh, you know," Chloe Fineman comes up to him. She's like, "Hey, can we make out?" And he's like, "Well, okay, but if you don't post it on social media," and she's like, "Oh, don't worry, just TikTok."
Exactly. So we have the real Morgan Wallen in this sketch, and I never realized it. He looks a lot like Shia LaBeouf. Am I the only one to think that or say that?
I don't know. I have not done research on this topic. I did not know this was going to come up.
That's right. Gotcha journalism at its finest right here.
I didn't make that connection.
Well, listeners, let me know. I think he looks like Shia LaBeouf with a mullet. That could be just me.
And, you know, just as Morgan's making these bad decisions, we have Jason Bateman coming in as Morgan Wallen from the future, saying like, "Hey, you don't want to do this. This is, you're going to regret this. You'll be uninvited from SNL, and who knows when they'll be able to have you on again."
Because he said at the end, Morgan from then says like, "Well, hey, I told her not to put this on online or social media or anything." And then of course Jason Bateman was like, "Well, yeah, I know. I thought that was an airtight approach as well, my friend." But
yeah,
apparently she goes and does it, and then, you know, Lauren has to kick you off the show.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they say, "Oh, Lauren." Then I think the Morgan Wallen says, "Oh, well, Lauren wouldn't do that. He wouldn't kick me off the show." And then Jason Bateman's Morgan Wallen says, "Oh, no, Lauren wouldn't do that. He ain't no puss. He's a goddamn man. He's got balls the size of Toyotas."
You're right. And then it comes out that the Morgan Wallen that Jason Bateman is playing is actually from only 1 month in the future, because Morgan says like, "Hey, whatever happened with the whole coronavirus thing?" And he's like, "Well, I don't know, because I'm from only 1 month in the future." And he's like, "Yeah, it's been a tough month." I'm just going to make him a joke about how much older Jason Bateman looks than Morgan Wallen, because Jason Bateman's a man in his 40s and Morgan Wallen is not, I'm presuming.
He's a young buck, as the kids say.
Yeah. And then we get a little more twisted. We have Bowen Yang coming in as Morgan from 2 months in the future.
Bowen Yang playing
Morgan Wallen. And I just, that was such a wonderfully bizarre touch. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, once he came in as Morgan Wallen, I was like, "All right, we're in silly town. All right, I'll go along with this."
We are in silly town. There was a weird kind of technical screw up where like Jason Bateman was speaking and then the camera is off him for a really long time.
Yeah, like if you look on the YouTube clip, it's not there anymore. They corrected it.
Oh, good.
But yeah, when you watch it live, it's literally just a camera on Morgan, Wallen, and Bowen, and Jason Bateman is talking, but the camera's not on him at all. And
yeah.
I was like, whoa, this is a glaring mistake.
Yeah, a rare technical screw-up from SNL. So I guess they just edited in the feed from another camera, or did they go with a dress rehearsal for the YouTube?
I'm not sure, but yeah, if you look on the YouTube, you can see they took that part out and they put in the right camera angle.
Okay, well, I'm glad they fixed that. Right. And I liked that they also said, hey, they'll have you on 2 months from now. Not many people are willing to fly to New York right now.
That seems like we're getting like a little peek behind the curtain right now.
Yeah, they might be having a little trouble booking the guests.
Oh boy.
So
all right.
Who knows? I enjoyed the sketch just because it was kind of off the wall, and I kind of like that they addressed the whole kerfuffle from a couple months ago.
Yeah, and like at the end, they have him singing to the camera the song called "Focus on the Future," and he says, "Thank you for giving this Southern boy a second Yankee chance." So like it seemed like this whole sketch was just just made so that Morgan Wallen could just apologize to the whole audience about this. Because, like, I remember seeing people saying that when he was getting booked to do the show, people were like saying, "Oh, why did he get the second chance to do this? Like, he put people's lives at risk. Fuck him. He's probably MAGA. Rah rah rah." Like, I think a few people were still kind of upset about it. So, like, this is a way to make a mea culpa, as we say.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that's exactly how Morgan Wallen phrased it. He's like, "Guys, I want to do a mea culpa."
Yeah, I'm going to do me a mea culpa.
Yeah. then right after this, we had the first of his musical segments where he did a song called Seven Summers.
Yeah, this is a smooth-ass song. Like when I heard this, it was like, oh, this sounds like something like some soft rock, some like almost yacht rocky type of song. It's like not really that country at all.
Yeah, I got a bit of a yacht rock vibe from it. Honestly, for most of his number, I was just fixating on the mullet.
Yeah, like is he trying to single-handedly bring back the mullet? Is he?
I don't know. You don't find many guys with a mullet in 2020.
You don't, but I think he's trying to bring it back.
It's a weird choice.
I thought we all agreed this was a mistake. Right,
people? Yeah, like around, like sometime in the early 90s, like say around 1992, we were like, yeah, we're not going to do this mullet thing anymore.
Yeah.
We're going to cut our hair in the back like normal people. We're going to grow our sideburns out really long because, Luke Perry, he's the thing right now. But mullets, no, not so much.
Oh, back when I had some hair, I had some serious sideburns going. It was legit.
Oh yeah, no, I did the Luke Perry sideburns where you'd grow them out for the entire length of your ear, and
yeah,
I never quite did the little pompadour thing that he and Jason Priestley had going, but yeah, oh.
Cool. You kind of like grease down your sideburns so they look thicker and wider.
I don't remember ever putting any product in the sideburns. No,
no pomade or anything like that. Something really make it pop.
No. I mean, I used some product back in the day, but not on the sideburns.
Yeah, like blonde tips or something like that?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, this is how we learn.
Yeah.
So, Seven Summers, just super smooth, just a smooth-ass beat.
I do not like his music.
Wow. All right. Yeah. No, I get it. Like, are you a country? Are you into country music at all? Country music,
not really.
Yeah, I'm the same.
When it gets real twangy, you just kind of lose me. It's not my thing.
Like, I can get into some southern rock, but as far as like straight up country, I'm not like the biggest fan. I mean, there's like a few exceptions, maybe like a few, Dolly Parton songs here or there, or like, what you call it, The Man in Black, who's
Johnny Cash,
or maybe even a Reba McEntire, or maybe not. Well, yeah, but like as far as
wow,
I'm sorry, Reba. I apologize.
Harsh to Reba McIntyre.
Because you know what it is?
No, maybe not. No, I don't like her.
You know what? Because I thought I was thinking about Reba McIntyre, and then I thought about it again, and I was like, oh, no, I'm thinking about Bonnie Raitt. I'm thinking about the other.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You're mixing up your redheaded country
stars. Okay. But, yeah, you know, no shade to Reba McIntyre. I'm sure you're fine, but it's not for me. But, yeah, as far as country music goes, I'm not a huge fan. But then he later on the night, he did the second song. What's it called? Still Going. And like, this was like such a stereo. Like, if you asked me to make a song,
this was that's what the song sounded like to me.
Like, if you asked me to make a song making fun of country music, I would make this song. Like, he literally mentioned drinking beer, his truck, his girl, you know, kicking around the dirt, being a good old boy, and like. He's doing all this while wearing a sleeveless plaid shirt, a la Larry the Cable Guy, with his and he has like the mullet pulled back, and you hear like slide guitar. I'm like, this is like every cliche, every stereotype of the South you could think of, just in one package.
I honestly would have muted this if I didn't have to watch it for the podcast. I was like, this is just so not my thing. This is not something I want to hear. This was I am going to go full Zoidberg on Morgan Wallen. Your music is bad and you should feel bad.
John, there goes our Southern demographic. I hope you're happy.
I don't want to offend the folks in the South. I used to live in the South, but I do not like Morgan Wallen's music.
People from Mississippi aren't going to love this episode.
Okay.
Hey, y'all citizens. Y'all city slickers up there talking about my boy Morgan Wallen.
So, I mean, it's nice that they gave him another chance and they had him back and all, but I would have done just as well without him.
Right.
And not especially a great match for Jason Bateman either.
That is true. That is true.
You know, you want a cool indie band or something for Jason Bateman, I think.
Yeah, some, I don't know, Mumford and Sons or, that's not even a cool indie band. I don't even know who's a cool indie band these days.
You have the Mumford and Sons.
Yeah. Something like that. The Lumineers or something like that. The kids love it these days.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, he could have been a good match with the Strokes.
There you go.
But Morgan Wallen, no, not so much.
More like Morgan Nolan, because I'd say nah to that.
Yeah.
TED Talk!
Just not my thing. Not my thing.
Not my thing.
All right, so moving on. We got the weekend update. We got the weekend update with the Colin Jost and the Michael Che and the news and the making the jokes about the news and the things.
Yeah, apparently the president's crazy, John. Did you hear this? Did you hear about this?
I did not know this. I have not. Apparently he's been like losing a lot of lawsuits and things. He's protesting the results of the election.
Yeah, he doth protest too much, and Giuliani's farting, and and things about that, and things of that nature.
Yeah, I liked the line the Trump administration opened another door on their advent calendar of losing, because I think they lost like 6 lawsuits in a day. I mean, they filed something like 40, and I think they've won one. Like 39 of them have been thrown out.
It's a lot of goose eggs up there. They're throwing up on the scoreboard.
And they talked about the various conspiracy theories that are circulating out there. Apparently one that of like North Koreans brought fake ballots to Maine and just said like, you know, because it's easier for North Koreans to make it to the East Coast.
Yeah.
Which, that was good. That was a good line. Very well delivered by Colin. That was good.
Hey, look at you giving props to Colin Jost.
I try to, when he does something I like, I try to give the devil his due.
All right, there you go. See, 2021 is—we're already starting off on a good foot.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. New year, new us.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, then we had Pete Davidson come in as one of the commentators.
Yes, actually, before that, I was going to talk about Michael Che talking about the vaccine.
All right.
Line there, he was saying like, you know, hey, on one hand, I'm black, so I don't trust it. But on the other, I'm on a white TV show, so I might actually get the real one.
That's a solid joke.
That's a great joke. That's a great joke, man.
I heard that. I was like, I got a good laugh at that. I was like, mm-hmm. Che, you done it again.
You done it again, Che. We like the Michael Che here.
We do.
But yes, next, as we said, Pete Davidson talking about some COVID-19 protests on Staten Island. And Pete Davidson, I guess, is like the designated Staten Island correspondent. So,
yeah, even though, you know, Colin Jost is also from Staten Island. But yeah, I guess right. It just kind of lands on Pete's shoulder because he had the movie King of Staten Island. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically, for those who don't know, there's a bar out in Staten Island that is kind of protesting the whole shutdown, like all. Hold on, let me see if I can find it. But it's like, it's becoming a big deal out there where, like, they refuse to shut down. They're still serving people. I think they designated themselves as a autonomous zone. Oh, yeah, here it is. So, you know, as that happened, like, they just refused to comply with the rules. And because they're in a part of Staten Island that's, like, the second highest in all of New York, they, like, the cops are, like, saying, hey, you got to shut down or you got to, like, have outdoor dining, and they're just like, nope, we're in an autonomous zone. We do what we want. And so the cops came and arrested the owner.
I do what I want.
So then the cops came in and arrested the owner, and people were like, this is unjust. This is just like the Holocaust. And then like the Proud Boys came in, and it's just basically just a lot of people kicking up a lot of dust over something that could just be solved quite easily if you just follow the rules. And like, why can't they follow the rules? And it's so dumb. Yeah, it's a big old gross mess. It's just people kind of wanted to paint themselves as victims where they don't have. I don't know. I don't want to get off on a tangent here.
Yeah, yeah. Somehow over the course of this segment, the 3.5 minute segment, Pete Davidson also brings up that there are Pete Davidson vibrators out there.
Which is an actual thing.
It's an actual thing. It's being sold on Etsy, apparently. And so, you know, hey, if that's your dream, if you've always wanted a Pete Davidson vibrator, go to Etsy. Go to town there.
Yeah. It's actually selling out really fast right now. Like, I looked at it. It's like they're, like, low in stock.
Okay.
So, I mean, I look for this podcast. That's why.
Okay. No, I'm not judging.
I was just doing research. I was doing research for the podcast. I'm not.
Okay.
You know, hey, I mean, you know, because, you know, podcast.
Right. Sure. Okay.
Oh, it's so hot here.
Did you go into incognito mode before you did that Google search for the Pete Davidson vibrators?
I wore a fake mustache and a trench coat and sunglasses.
That's not what an incognito mode means.
It's not? Well, that's what I did.
No. Okay. Yeah, that's gonna affect your search results for the next few weeks, I think.
Aw, damn it.
All right. Well, you enjoy that.
I'm going to have to clear my browser history, aren't I?
I look forward to hearing what sort of ads you start getting.
Oh, boy.
He also, towards the end, he talked about how apparently there's been a big online brouhaha because he's doing a stage reading of It's a Wonderful Life for charity, and he's playing George Bailey. And Pete Davidson's like, you know, hey, if they were doing a live-action remake, I agree, I would be wrong for this, but I am doing this for charity, and, you know, it's a thing they asked me to do. And... He also said It's a Wonderful Life. It's an old-timey movie about a guy who's suicidal. I'm famously depressed, and I have the complexion of someone in a black and white movie. Funny line.
It is. It is. Like I've said time and time again, like Pete Davidson's at his best when he's just him talking to the camera. You know, it's kind of like Leslie Jones, where they're at their best when they're just being themselves, doing their act, or just telling jokes to the camera. Like,
yeah,
like, you know, they're not. They're so-so in sketches, but times like this is where they really shine.
Yeah, well, it's because of the stand-up background. You know, that's their comfort zone.
Right, absolutely. I like this part. I like like I said, like when Pete kind of talks, I do kind of feel like they are doing a thing where they kind of keep Pete on just so he can do these segments and just kind of talk about his life and things of that nature. Like they've done this before, like with the whole Ariana Grande thing and, you know, what he said about the that dude with the one eye. Like it seems like whatever happens to Pete in the tabloids is like fodder for the next SNL segment.
I mean, or he comes on, he says something outrageous, then he comes on the next week and apologizes for the outrageous thing he said. And I mean, they've learned how to use Pete pretty well.
Absolutely.
Next, we had Heidi returning as teen movie critic Bailey Gismert. And this time, because she's been quarantined, she's watching old movies like Forrest Gump and American Beauty and Silence of the Lambs. And I feel so very, very old.
Yeah. Because Michael Che says, oh, you watch old movies like Casablanca and stuff? Mm-hmm. And she's like, no, and like old movies like Forrest Gump. And like her big thing is her saying, oh, you can't do that anymore.
Right.
This is one of the times where I noticed the audience was something was up with them, where she was saying like, oh, like I watched Forrest Gump and like, I didn't know like Tom Hanks had like trouble when he was younger. Like
right.
I didn't know
he had to overcome a lot. She thinks that, cause she only knows Tom Hanks from David Pumpkins.
Yeah, exactly. And then Che says, oh no, he was acting. He's not like that.
He doesn't have those mental difficulties.
Yeah, and then Bailey was like, oh, you can't do that anymore. Like, they should have gotten, you know, somebody who's an actual, you know, Forrest Gump to play that part. Right. You could hear the audience just tightening up at that point.
Lot of buttocks were being clenched at that moment. Yes.
Like, they were so uncomfortable with that. But, like, if you listen to what she's saying, she's actually being progressive and woke. She's saying, you know, she's saying the same thing people say now about how, like, people with disabilities shouldn't be played by people without them. They should be played by people with disabilities. That's all she's saying, but it's in a joke form. So people were just like, oh, I don't know if I could laugh at that.
Yeah.
It was really interesting.
Yeah. So this is the point where you turned on the audience and you were like, oh, come on, people.
Yeah, because like I thought that was a solid point he was making. But then there's another sketch. I think it's the next sketch where we'll talk about it.
Okay,
but,
we'll get into it. And then she also watched American Beauty and she's like, oh, you can't do that anymore. And Michael Che's like, oh, because of Kevin Spacey and, you know, the stuff that's come out about him. And she's like, no, you can't do that anymore because of the plastic bags, which I thought that was funny.
Yeah, because like that thing can choke a duck, Michael.
Yeah.
And then she talked about how much she liked Silence of the Lambs and how that had some funny stuff in it and how much she likes like Buffalo Bill.
Yeah. And then it kind of comes out that she has like a crush on Buffalo Bill.
Yeah. She's like, don't tell Buffalo Bill. He likes to chase.
Yeah. This was all right.
I thought it was pretty strong. Then they also talk about, there's like, they break the fourth wall a little bit where I think, you know, she does that thing at the end of everything where she talks about how stressed out she is over everything, mm-hmm. about like, you know, in school and everything. And she's like, Che, you don't know what it's like being me. I got a lot going on. You're not even in sketches, so you barely work.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was nice. And I think, and then at the end, she says the same thing. She always says, like, oh, well, if you like what I'm about, you know, hit the subscribe button below. And then Che says, yeah, Bailey, this isn't a YouTube video. This is live TV. This isn't online anywhere. And she's like, yeah, I know. Like, I can't even find SNL on Netflix. You know that's bad, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a nice little knock at Peacock. I don't know. I think this is one of the things where both of the commentary, like, I thought, like, Pete and Bailey Gismert, I thought they were both stronger than the actual Weekend Update.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's, I don't know. I dug them both. That's, you know, I always like to see Heidi work. I always think she's, like, incredible.
You know what? Something I was surprised by. I actually watched this back on my recording this morning because I conked out kind of early last night when the show was live. I'm amazed how deep into the show Weekend Update is now. It's like an hour into the show, and it's just, I don't know. I'm used to it being like a little past the first half hour or 40 minutes into the show, but it just seems like it's getting deeper and deeper into the show.
Well, what time did it come on? I didn't even notice. What time did it come on last night?
It was about an hour into the show.
Like 12:30?
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I was watching my recording, so it was into the show. So I would assume that would be around 12:30, but I was not watching it live. So
got it. Yeah, like I mean, yeah, like usually, yeah, usually comes on. Like, I didn't even notice that. Wow, like usually, like you're right. It usually comes on like around 12, mm-hmm. like a half hour in. I didn't even realize it was like they were starting at 12:30. That is pretty late.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, next we had Santa's Village, which is the second sketch of the night where Jason Bateman plays Santa.
That's right. He's found his niche, his wheelhouse.
Yeah. And so it's a family going to the mall to see Santa and Mrs. Claus, but because they're trying to be safe in pandemic world, they're in snow globes. So they're in just sort of bubbles. And wackiness ensues.
Right. Yeah. So basically it's Melissa and Mikey and their kid. They're all wearing masks. And at one point in the beginning, they have Kyle as like a sort of a robotic elf. He's like talking to them through mm-hmm. like an iPad. And he says, yeah. Oh, you know, we want everybody to be safe. So put your hand in my tummy for hand sanitizer. And then they do. And I thought that would be the sketch. Mm-hmm. But then no, that's just part of the set. Then they go into this other thing, and it's like you said, where it's Cecily as Mrs. Claus in a snow globe, and Jason as Santa in a snow globe, kind of like the remembers of like the Flaming Lips a little bit, like the big hamster wheel.
Oh yeah, yeah, type of thing. Yeah,
a hamster ball rather.
Yeah, they're in the air bubble thing where you can move it around just by walking inside of it, and it rolls.
Yeah,
around.
And it seemed like there was something wrong with Cecily's bubble because it seemed like her head was hitting the ceiling of it. So maybe the bubble wasn't inflated 100% because you see at some points like Cecily's kind of holding up the top of her bubble with her hand.
I didn't notice that. I'd have to go back and look at that.
Then it's like, oh, maybe her bubble isn't as inflated as Jason's is, but yeah. Whatever. But
I mean, I imagine so, we had to be setting this up while Weekend Update was going on because I would think this would take a while to set up, but. But yeah, the joke is like the globes roll off the platforms and they take a spill and they're trying to recover and da 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 da.
Yeah, and like this is a sketch where I thought something was up with the audience just because it's like you said, like they were like, oh, ho, ho, I'll come down to you, little girl. And of course, a lot of physical comedy. He rolls down the stairs in his bubble, smashes all the ornaments and presents. Dead silence from the audience. And I thought that was just weird. Because, like, usually physical comedy gets some type of reaction from people. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought physical comedy was, like, the quickest way to get, like, a big laugh or just, like, a shock or something. But
I mean, Jason, I feel like this didn't go over big because it wasn't that unexpected. You know, you see them spill once and then you see them spill a few more times and you're not really surprised by it.
That's true. Yeah, but, like, I don't know, the audience, it's just, maybe it's just because it's so sad when somebody falls and nobody laughs. I don't know. I expected something from the audience, but like they were giving them nothing. And then you see Cecily talk to, she kind of breaks character, calls the Santa Claus John, because that's he's an actor named John. And, you know, Santa's like, oh my God, I told you guys to secure the base. And Cecily's like saying, oh, I thought you meant that as like a political thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do you mean? But yeah, it's like, you know, it's like, it's a political year. I thought it was something like that. Like I thought that was a decent joke. And then, of course, Mrs. Claus, you know, tries to walk down to the kids, and she's holding cupcakes. And of course, she takes a spill. Cupcakes fall on her face. And again, the audience gives nothing. It was like oddly quiet as all these people just kind of flounder and fall about on the floor. It was just like, oh, this is kind of weird and sad.
Yeah. I don't think sketch. I feel like you liked it a lot more than I did.
I thought it was okay, but like I'm just saying, like usually when there is some type of physical comedy or something, you know, like somebody falls or smashed through a wall or something, usually there's like a gasp from the audience, or you know, they're just like, oh my God, like something, some type of reaction from the audience, like whenever any type of physical stuff happens. But the audience just looked at it and was like, oh, okay. And it's like they weren't shocked by it or amused by it. They were just like indifferent to it.
The audience was a bunch of chads.
What was that?
The audience was a bunch of chads. They were like, okay.
Yes. It was a chatty audience. Absolutely. They
were a chatty audience.
And yeah, and that's pretty much the sketch. It's like at one point we see Mikey and Melissa try to walk up to the guys in a snow globe, trying to take a picture with them, and of course they still fall around. At one point, Cecily literally rolls over Mikey Day with her hamster ball, and it's like just them, like it's all physical comedy, and like it didn't get much of a reaction from a lot of people in the audience. It was just like right now. I'm not getting much reaction from
you. I don't have much to say about this. It didn't really work for me. So
yeah, same. I thought it was interesting, but yeah, same thing. I was like, all right, I guess that was that.
That was the thing that they did.
Because there was so much. It seemed like there was so much production and so much stuff set up for it. It seemed like the payoff was just not there.
Yep. All right. So lastly, we had a pre-tape called Bits, which was just a bunch of friends watching a football game, and they're joking around. And then Kyle Mooney's character, he just kind of screws up the joke. He doesn't really do that. And then he sings a song about why he can't keep the joke going.
Right. Apparently, this sketch was cut from the Chappelle episode because, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, of course that ran super long because Chappelle was like, "I'm gonna talk for 15 minutes," and of course, you know, this got cut. So yeah, basically, it's another sketch with Kyle being super awkward, as that's his bread and butter.
Mm-hmm.
And but I kind of like the sketch a little bit. I know with like Kyle, I'm usually kind of hot and cold, but I thought this sketch was pretty good. I kind of like this more than I usually do a Kyle sketch.
You know, it was all right. Yeah, it's certainly the type of thing that you put towards the end of the show. But I didn't mind it.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically like Kyle's, because like you said, like their friends joking around, and it's usually like a thing where somebody tells a joke, then somebody adds on to that joke, somebody adds on to that joke,
mm-hmm.
and you know, usually there's somebody who tries to add on to that joke, keep the joke train going, and fail miserably and to just kill the entire joke. And
yes, we've all been there.
Oh, I'm hilarious, so I have not. But I've heard of it. I've heard of people being like that.
Right. Yeah. You read a lot, so.
Yeah. What?
You read a lot, so you've read about people bombing.
Yes, I've, from what I understand, bombing is pretty terrible. Like, I mean, I don't know. Hopefully I hope it doesn't happen to me at all, you know, ever, because, you know, I totally crush and dominate every stage I get on. But right. From what I've heard, it's not good. So, you know, right. My heart goes out to those people who cannot tell a joke. Thoughts and prayers.
Yeah. Huh. So, and that was the show. I mean, what'd you think of the show overall, Darren?
Overall, I thought it was okay. Just kind of middle of the road.
Yeah, I think it was an off show for him, honestly. You know, I only like sort of semi-liked most of the sketches. There wasn't any one thing that really blew me away. I'd say probably my favorite thing on the show was the Jason Bateman monologue. I thought that was the funniest thing in the show.
You know what? I'll go with that. I mean, the stew sketch I thought was all right. I like the concept. Maybe I like the concept more than the execution a little bit.
Yeah,
you know.
The stew sketch was pretty solid. That was another thing. You know, the Christmas conversation I liked, with, you know, the caveat of, you know, I didn't like the ending. I thought they flubbed the ending, but overall, I thought it was just kind of an eh show.
Yeah, I mean, like the sleepover had some funny parts here and there, some funny lines,
mm-hmm.
but like overall, I was like, oh, I've kind of seen this before. Yeah, and everything else just seemed kind of like almost there, but not really quite. But there are like a little flashes of pretty funny stuff here and there, but nothing really kind of came full to fruition for me.
I thought Jason Bateman was a good host. I'd like to see him come back. I'd like to see him come back before another 15 years have passed.
Right. I mean, if we're still here by then, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, you know, who knows if we're going to be here 15 days from now, but...
Absolutely. I mean, Lord knows. We could all die tomorrow.
I hope we're here 15 days from now, because they've got another show set for another couple weeks, so...
They do. Next episode, they got themselves Timothy Chalamet and Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. I'm not... I think I said last week, I'm not terribly familiar with Timothy Chalamet. I'm not even certain if he's, like, say, 16, 22, or 30. I have no idea. I'm not even sure if I could pick this dude out of a lineup, but...
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of the hot new up-and-coming talent. He's been in a bunch of stuff that I have not seen.
Right.
But...
you gave his credit last week, and I was like, I've not seen that, I've not seen that, I've not seen that, so...
Okay, so, all right, so he's 24, and he's been in... Call Me By Your Name.
Haven't seen it.
Have you seen it?
Heard it's good.
Lady Bird.
Haven't seen it. Heard it's good.
The most recent Little Women.
Haven't seen it. Heard mixed things.
Okay. What else? What is got a Beautiful Boy.
Have not seen it.
And of course, you haven't seen it, but the upcoming Dune remake with that by Denis Villeneuve.
Have not seen it. Have not seen the previous Dune. Have never read the book.
Wow! So you're going in. You're going in with a clean old slate.
Yeah, I am. I am very, very ignorant of the Timothy Chalamet.
As am I.
Oh, all right.
But since we are men in our 40s, we're not ignorant of Bruce Springsteen and E Street Band. That's in our wheelhouse. No.
Yeah, we are looking forward to the Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. And honestly, yeah, as men in our 40s, it'd be weird if we did know stuff about Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah,
I think that's about all I can be expected to know about Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah, if I knew everything about Timothy Chalamet, I'd expect one of our listeners to call the police, and they would be in the right to do so.
That'd be weird. I mean, our names would be on a list somewhere, I think.
As they should be.
I am literally twice his age.
Yeah.
I should not know about Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah, if I know all that stuff about Timothy Chalamet, put me behind bars, because I'm up to no good.
Exactly. But, yeah, we'll discover stuff about him, and maybe we'll become Timothy Chalamet superfans. Maybe this podcast will become a Timothy Chalamet podcast,
where maybe we'll become
projects every single week.
Maybe we'll become Timothy Chalamaniacs.
Maybe. We'll just become new Timothy Chalamet fanboys.
He does have
a fun name to say. I will say that. I will give him that.
Yeah, he spells it weird. It's like with two E's and an accent over the E, but it's just...
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't care for that. But it is fun to say Timothy Chalamet. It's just... It's a fun thing to say. Timothy Chalamet. Whoa.
Chalamet. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's our episode, guys. Thanks again for listening. Thanks again so much for listening. We did get a few tweets about this episode. Let me see if I could pull them up right here.
Lay them on me. I don't think I've seen these.
On the old Twitter machine.
Mm-hmm.
We put out that we were doing this episode. Of course, from Nickstore, at Nickstore, saying, I liked it. Watching it straight after the Hemsworth episode felt more like a pre-Trump era, no cameos. That's another thing we should mention. There was no cameos in the cold open, which we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, you know, I hadn't thought about, but that's very nice.
Yeah, a cold open with just the cast members? What?
I know. That's crazy enough. It just might work.
Yeah, no cameos. Good use of most of the cast. Chris and Keenan are out, and Alex is still woefully underused. The first sketch proper was the worst. Stu probably the best. Gives it a 3, which is, yeah, fair enough. Vax Novier says probably the most average show of the year so far. There were moments that implied a step in the right direction, while others' parts took a bit of a leap back in progress. And then, of course, we had our friend of the show, Ruby the Rube, saying that. Asking if it's better or worse than his 2005 episode. That one has an interesting reputation. And of course, she was referring to the monkeys throwing poop at celebrities, which you can see on YouTube. But I thought she was referencing, there was another sketch on that episode called Gaze in Space. And, oh boy.
I was not aware of that.
It's exactly what you think it is.
Yeah, I didn't go back and revisit the older Jason Bateman episode. I could go back and watch some of those sketches, I suppose, if I didn't have all my Jason Bateman needs met by this episode. Yeah, like I said, I thought it was kind of an off episode. It was really nice to see Cecily back in the studio with the rest of the cast, because I'd really missed her on the show, because she wasn't on the show very much.
And that's another thing. Like, I thought when Cecily made her first appearance, I thought, like, the audience would be roused up and applauding, like, hey, Cecily's back. Nothing. They were just like, oh, okay.
I mean, maybe, I know that they've been drawing a lot of the audience from First Responders, so maybe they weren't particular fans of the show. Maybe they don't follow the show too closely. Maybe that was a factor. I don't know.
I guess. The audience on the show was like, I don't know what was up with them. They were pretty.
Your audience was bad, and you should feel bad.
Exactly, I said it.
Yeah.
If you got a problem, find me on Twitter at DarrenCredible, DARA Incredible, and Instagram. Hit me up.
Right.
If we got a problem, we could solve it, son. Know what I mean?
And if you got a problem with me, you can find me on at Trumbull Comic on Twitter and Instagram. And that's TRUMBULL, and then the word comic. But don't at me if you have a problem with me, because I don't like arguing with strangers on the internet. I really don't.
You know, the more I think about it, don't at me with your problems too. I'm very sensitive and I cry easily.
Yeah, just follow me and retweet me when I say something funny or witty and agree with the things I say. That's all I ask. Is that too tough to ask?
That's all I just want to be loved. Is that so wrong?
I was thinking about that this week. I was thinking about John Lovitz doing what's that person's name? Firestein.
Harvey Firestein.
I was thinking about that at work at one point. I was like, John Lovitz did an impression of Harvey Firestein. How did I ever think that John Lovitz was straight? You know, shouldn't that have been a big old hint?
Yeah, John Lovitz. He's a true gem.
I don't think that most heterosexual men would develop a Harvey Firestein impression. But
hello, everyone.
But it honestly never occurred to me that John Lovitz was gay until I saw him on one of those Comedy Central roasts, and everyone was like making fun of him for being gay, and I was like, oh wait, is John Lovitz gay? And it honestly never occurred to me before.
It honestly never occurred to me till just now, till you just mentioned it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah, he's like, I don't think he's ever been married. And he has like a flowery way of saying things. Like, he has a bit of a flourish. Yeah.
And I don't think he's as far as I know, I don't think he's ever officially come out or acknowledged or that. And, you know, and that's, if that's fine, that's his choice. You know, you come out when you and how you want to come out. That is absolutely your choice. But I was just thinking, like, how is the Harvey Firestein impression not a hint? I don't know.
That got by all of us.
Just an idle thought that I had this week.
And also, if you want to tweet at us at SNL Nerds Show, if you want to tell us your John Lovitz thoughts and ideas, tweet at us.
Yeah, we love them, those. We love discussing John Lovitz all the live long day. Follow us at SNL Nerds Show on the Twitter and the Instagram. Please write us, talk to us, tell us your thoughts, tell us your John Lovitz theories, and we will perhaps tweet back at you.
Absolutely, you know, it'll be our little it'll be a nice little give and forth back and forth there.
That's about it. Please join us next week while we discover all about Timothy Chalamet and we revisit Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. But until then, Nerds out.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.